Before I introduce Rabbi Brand, just a few words of thanks. It works in shul when I try this.
There's food back there.
There's food, yeah, right. It doesn't work in Kiddush, I know. I want to thank for today not only everyone who has spoken, but also especially Mizrahi for helping make everything happen. Rabbi Eisenberg, the executive director, the real executive director, his wife Jossi. In addition to that, Joel Jacobson and Alan Gershman, who are the co-presidents of Mizrahi. They were responsible for everything from the food that is the wonderful distraction to setting up the chairs and making sure everything is set for today, even for the recording of the shiur. A couple of quick things. One is the shiurim will be posted on a website. We'll discover which one soon, and we'll let people know. Number two is the bagels at the Dunkin' Donuts are Pas Yisrael. So just to...
Not the donuts,
but the bagels are all Pas Yisrael. So when the time comes during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, that's one chumer you can do at Dunkin' Donuts without a problem. This week I had the opportunity to meet with the members of the YU Torah Mitzion Kollel and to talk with them as I do every year as part of the orientation. And I always appreciate the honor that I'm given to do so. And yet one of the things that I shared with the newer members of the Kollel is the fact that the Kollel has truly transformed Torah learning within our religious Zionist community, and it's something that's very, very important to us. The reason it's been able to transform Torah learning in our community is because the Kollel is led by Rabbi Brand. Rabbi Brand is really part of our community, despite the fact that he happened to be born in the wrong community and only made his way over to Chicago several years ago to do the necessary tshuva and be part of this community. But Rabbi Brand has led the Kollel, built the Kollel, and he has taught literally thousands of people in our community with great talent and bringing great honor to our community. It is therefore only fitting that we conclude the Yom Iyun with Rabbi Brand. Without any further ado, our Rav Reuven Brand.
Thank you, Rabbi Matenki. Pirshus, this is a very distinguished group and gathering to recognize the members of the Matenki family that are here, and specifically Mrs. Matenki, should merit to gather together with your family to celebrate wonderful milestones and good health with nachas from your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, zum lange Jahren, for many, many years in good health. To recognize the presence of Rabbi Tarragon, special guest, and my dear chaver, Rabbi Engel, what an honor it is to share Torah this morning with Rabbi Matenki. Rabbi Engel, Mrs. Matenki, great Tzibor, many friends. So I would start with a joke, but I'm very poor at telling jokes, so it would be a joke if I were to say, imagine you went to a gathering and there was a Goro Hador, there was a world-class renowned educator, and Reuven Brand, who all were on the same lineup. So for some it would be a joke, for me it's reality. And so obviously, I'm not going to pretend I'm not a Gaon Hador, I'm not a great, well-known, internationally renowned educator. As Rabbi Matenki mentioned, I am just a very happy, privileged member of our Chicago community, of our Kollel community, and of the Mizrahi community. And I think it's just important to pause for a moment. Rabbi Tarragon mentioned in his remarks about reflecting in the context of Chumrah about what is our overall religious outlook. You know, how do we consider ourselves in terms of our religious composition? And one of the things that we need to ask ourselves is how does, in the year 2014, when being a religious Zionist, I would say, is not necessarily one of the most popular items on Facebook or social media, at least in my experience in America, how do we define ourselves in this current climate, especially for people who didn't grow up in a pre-State of Israel existence, didn't have that experience that type of formative perspective. So how do we define ourselves in being part of the RCC and being a part of this Yom Iyun and reflecting on those values is certainly something that is worthwhile for us to consider. I discussed with Rabbi Mitenki several different options for this morning, and he had suggested that we spend a few minutes discussing some divrei halacha that are pertinent to Shemitah. And as I mentioned before, I'm not a posek, and I'm not an expert in any realm of Torah in any measure. The area of Shemitah is a very complex one, and the purpose this morning is just in the brief time that we have to share a survey based on one pasuk. We're going to learn just one pasuk together, and we'll put out a few concepts that actually, surprisingly, may be very relevant to us, and we never considered them before, especially those of us who have lived in America, haven't traveled to Israel during Shemitah or subsequent to Shemitah in the immediate period. So it may be surprising to us, and we'll find that some things are actually quite relevant, even though we didn't anticipate them. But for a practical ruling, obviously you have to speak to your Mora Hora. I would say there are several Sfarim that have become more popular in recent years now that Shemitah has become more of a popular topic. So two Sfarim, among many, that have been very, very useful to me. One is, there is a Rav in Israel. His name is Rav Menachem Bernstein. Rav Menachem Bernstein is a tremendous Talmud Chacham, also a wonderful human being, who is the founder, the leader of Machon Pua. Machon Pua is it's a unique institution in Israel that serves to assist couples who are facing infertility challenges. So that's what Rav Menachem is most known for, but he's also a machaber of several Sfarim, and one of the Sfarim that he has published is on Shemitah, and it's like an organized, very methodical way of learning the laws of Shemitah in a practical way. So that's one address. If someone's looking for a Sefer on Shemitah, so Rav Menachem Bernstein has a Sefer on Shemitah. Another Sefer on Shemitah, which was now, I believe it was republished in a different format than the one that I have, is from Rav Yosef Tzvi Rimon. Rav Rimon is probably a close confidant of Rabbi Tarrigan, if I were to guess. He is the Rav of one of the shulin in the Kehillah in Alon Shvut. I don't know if he's the Rav of the whole Yeshuv or the Rav of the shul in the Yeshuv, one of the major shulin in the Yeshuv. He's also from the Halacha Kolel in Yeshivat Har Etzion, and he's the founder of Jab Katif, also a tremendous human being. These are Rabbonim who are Torasim Umnasim, but also Am Yisrael. It's like that's how they live. They help people. That's what the Bon Shalom brought them to this world. They're both amazing people. And Rav Rimon's Sefer also is very practical. He adds a lot of photographs, pictures, things that are very pertinent halacha lemaisa. So if people are interested, and I believe at least the last time around it was translated into English, I don't know if it's currently available in English, but at least the last go round of Shemitah was, you can access that in English, and there are many more resources available. So my goal today to share with you is just one pasuk, which is xeroxed on a piece of paper floating around somewhere. It's a pasuk in Parshas Bahar. And that's the pasuk with which we will discuss these five areas that are pertinent, halacha lemaisa, practically, to consider when we think about the impact of Shemitah on those of us who are not farmers, who are just living in America, who are Shemitah consumers. And that is, the pasuk tells us here in Parshas Bahar, in Vayikra Chavhei Vav, V'hoysa Shabbas Ha'aretz Lachem Le'ochla. It will be the Sabbath of the land, the resting of the land, for you for eating. And then the pasuk continues, L'cha u'la'avdecha v'la'amasecha v'la'schircha u'la'toshavcha, etc. And then the next pasuk goes on to describe that it's also for your animals, if you have pets. That also is included in the rubric of Shemitah. But this is the most, I would say, the most important pasuk for us as consumers. I brought my trusty board. Thank you to Rabbi Engel for loaning me half of it. And what I'd like to do is enumerate five aspects of this pasuk that we can take with us and understand what are the implications of Shabbos Ha'aretz Lachem La'achla for us. So I guess the first thing is to stand back before we even consider what the parameters of what this statement La'achla means, is just take a step back and what does the Torah seem to be telling us here? So one way of looking at this pasuk and say it is descriptive. There will be stuff that will grow in the land, and that's also going to be a subject of a lot of controversy. What happens with things that grow just by themselves, or someone grew them inappropriately? But generally speaking, the stuff that grows in the Shemitah, it's descriptive. You'll eat it. It grows, you'll eat it. It's descriptive. But there is another way to look at this pasuk, and it's not a descriptive tone. It is a prescriptive tone. V'hoysa Shabbos acharetz lachem la'achla. Go out and eat it. Who is the master of this opinion? This is the Ramban, Nachmanides. He has a small section of glosses to the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam. The Rambam wrote, essentially, a work that all you need, he says, is my work and a Tanakh, and you're good to go. But how do you know what's in my work? So he says, I'll give you a little introduction, a minyan, essentially, an enumeration of the 613 biblical requirements. There are more than that, but that's the Rambam whittles them down to 613 based on the Gemara and Makos. He says, here are the 613. And he tells you all the things, and then that introduction, which was written in Arabic, is the introduction to the big work that the Rambam wrote called the Yad HaChazaka. There he's going to tell you all the things you need to know to be a proper Jew. In that introduction, the Rambam gives you all the 613 mitzvahs, and Nachmanides, the Ramban, comes afterwards, and he says, B'mechilas po the Rambam, you'll excuse me, but you have forgot some. Those are what we would call the Shichachas Ha'esim, those he forgot. Now, obviously, the Rambam, his memory was pretty sharp when he did this. He didn't forget them. You don't have to worry. He excluded them for his own reasons, but the Ramban calls them the shechachas, the things that the Rambam forgot, he left out. So there is a number of them, and this number, and the third, the shechachas ha'esin, the proactive commandments, according to the Ramban, is this pasuk, that it is a mitzvah to eat peiros shvius. So on the one hand, and I've heard this many times from Rav Rimon, in different shiurim, on the one hand, people get very nervous. You spoke about people who have a culture of nerves. So some people get very nervous about peiros shvius. They get nervous because they have sanctity. And we love our Ribono Shalom, we love Yiddishkeit, we want to be so punctilious about how we observe it. So you get so nervous, I don't know, so maybe I'm just better eating of something else. But the Ramban says, no, it's a mitzvah d'oraisa, according to the Ramban, a biblical mitzvah to get a hold of peiros shvius and eat. And eat something that has peiros shvius. So the first thing to think about from this pasuk is that there is a mitzvah to eat peiros shvius according to the Ramban. But then there is a series of drushes that appear in Chazal, and that's why I gave you the Torah Tamima Chumash, because the Torah Tamima gives you like a little survey of different things that appear on every pasuk in Tanakh, and the paper that you have in front of you has on the bottom the breakdown per word what Chazal are seeing when they read these psukim. So if you go down where I put the little number one, this is based on the Yerushalmi and Shvius. It's just a little more efficient than quoting the whole Yerushalmi here. We'll trust that he has the correct citation for the moment. Lachem, it's for you. Kol shehu lachem la'achila v'lishsia l'sicha u'litzvia. Any normal use, we'll use that imprecise term, normal use of a product, that's going to be permitted for the use of peiros shvius, fruits that grows on shvius. And again, I'm not discussing how it grew on Shemitah. Either it grew on Shemitah because it just is a tree and it grows by itself. You know, if you have an apple tree in your backyard, it doesn't stop growing on Shemitah. It keeps growing, so it's going to bring out fruits, even though you didn't touch it, you didn't prune it, you didn't water it, it just brings out fruits. So here you have these fruits. Now, there are regulations of how you harvest it and whether you're allowed to put a fence around it. That notwithstanding, you have fruits that have kedusha shvius, they have the sanctity, they are endowed with this kedusha, these fruits that you hold in your hand. So number one, according to Ramban, it's a mitzvah to eat them. But number two, they're supposed to be used in a specific way for eating, drinking, sicha, anointing, and tzviya. So for example, there are those who grow spices that were used. This is well known to those who studied the origins of Hilchos Shabbos. Samamonim, dyes in the Mishkan, most of the dyes came from plants. So if you grow plants, those dyes that are extracted from the plants, they have kedusha shvius. So those dyes are permitted to be used for dyeing clothing. And the same thing, you grow food, so that food is going to be used for eating. Now, there is also something to keep in mind for those who have pets. Also, there is maichal adam, there's human consumption food, and then there is dog food, animal food. That's also appropriate for peiros shvius based on the next pasuk. But what the Rambam points out, and just to make a long story short, because it's got to be very short this morning, is that this is true for eating, drinking, anointing, and painting, but it's not true, as the Darshan later on in Chazal, for refuah, for medical purposes. I'm not speaking about pikuach nefesh, that you have to some kind of absolute emergency. But these are not just four categories that are kind of symbolic of other general categories. No, these are very specific. These are the normal uses of these products, as opposed to taking something and changing it. It has to be in these channels. If you have something that's normally a food product, so the Rambam says, in Hilchos Shemitah v'Yovel, that you may not transform it into another type of product. If you have an apple, I apologize, I'm going to actually have to hold questions all the way until the end because of time. If you have an apple, and this apple is going to be used for eating, it's a regular eating apple, so it's highly questionable whether or not you could take this apple. It would probably be inappropriate to take the apple and transform it into a shampoo, for example. You know, sometimes shampoo have certain fragrances, so you're going to take an apple, chop it up, and make it into a shampoo. So that would be abnormal. That would be unusual. So the interesting halakhic question comes up regarding juice. So this is a topic in Hilchos Brachos, in the sixth parak of Brachos. If I have an orange, and I squeeze the orange, what bracha do I make on that juice? So the predominant opinion is that you make the bracha of Shehakol Niyabidvaro, because the juice that is extracted, that's not called the fruit, that's something else. That's, the Gemara calls it Zeya Ba'alma, whatever that means. But here's a good question. So does that mean that I'm not allowed to take a fruit on Shemitah and make juice out of it by squeezing the juice into a cup? Because now it was an orange that I would eat for a snack, dessert. Now I'm going to drink it for breakfast as a beverage. So the Rambam discusses this in the context of grapes, because grapes are normally made into wines. The Rambam says, oh, you could certainly make grapes into wine, and so too you can make olives into oil, because that's the normal use of these things. It also has ramifications for Hilchos Shabbos, not for today. But what about other fruits? So this is an interesting discussion in Acharonim about the propriety. I saw in the name of the Chazon Ish that the Chazon Ish says that today it is normal to take oranges and make them into juice. But it would be interesting to discuss with a Moritz Tzedek, with somebody who is a posek, what about different kinds of oranges? It's just something to think about. There is actually a difference between juice oranges and regular oranges that people eat. So then one could consider, and this is a discussion with Chil Michal Tukhachinsky and other Acharonim in the last 100 years have discussed this question. Is juicing something, is making orange juice or apple juice a violation of la'achla, for specifically for eating and not to be mishana? Another similar question that comes up in the context of Hilchos Brachos. Some people in this room, you serve in the summertime, you serve like an appetizer for Shabbos lunch, you serve like strawberry soup. Some people have seen this? Seen this? Oh, okay, good. So I'm not the only one who have seen this. You've seen this. Mrs. Buckman, you've seen this strawberry soup? Okay. So people make the strawberry soup, and here this is a, you talk about a halakhic conundrum. Strawberry soup is a big halakhic conundrum, because it started out as strawberries, which are very, well, that might not help you with strawberry soup. That itself is a question, whether you have to make a separate broth on the strawberry soup when you start your meal. Okay, that's a further question. We really have a lot of problems with the strawberry. Let's assume you eat the strawberry soup before you wash, and you for sure have to make a broth. So here you're eating your strawberry soup. It started out as a hadama, and now it's completely pulverized and pureed. It doesn't resemble a strawberry in its life. You brought this to some person that had never seen it, you would tell them it's strawberry, they wouldn't believe you. So what bracha do you make on this? So this appears in the Gemara, again in Masechta Brachos, in the context called trima, where they used to mash up dates, and even today they have such a thing, date paste or date, you know, pulverized mush. So the question becomes, what bracha do you make on such a thing? And it's even a discussion in the Shulchan Aruch about what the bracha is, and even in the Acharonim, the Ramah and the Taz, they discuss what bracha. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I shouldn't speak out of turn, that because there's a suffix bracha, some people say you say shahakol, some people say you still say ha'adama. I believe the contemporary practice is to say shahakol. This way you have fulfilled both opinions, because in this case of doubt, and one option is shahakol, you could say shahakol. So I think most people, if I'm not mistaken, they say shahakol and strawberry soup. Is that... Oh, don't eat strawberry soup. Okay. Yes. Strawberry soup. Okay. Strawberry soup is shahakol. Same thing, applesauce, when it's very pulverized. If it's chunky, you made it yourself, so you can make hadama. But if it's very, very pulverized, so you can make a shahakol. What about making applesauce, very pulverized applesauce, out of peiro shvius? So here you have the same question. Because now, I am no longer have, if I'm going to make a shahakol, I can't say it's my apple anymore, it's my strawberry. It's now going to be my puree, and now I'm going to say shahakol. So here again, we didn't necessarily think about this. The concept of shinoi mi briyaso, that it has to be its an original form, its original channel, that's one thing that's going to be on our mind. So we'll put that right here.
But isn't that the normal way of feeding those foods to infants and elderly people?
So that's a great question of what you consider a shinui, what's normal. So that's a further discussion of how to determine what foods, and like I said before, even within a food, you know, this comes up in many areas of halacha, how much do you distinguish between, let's say, a target audience, for example, what's normal in general in Hilchos Brachos? You know, what's a shir kviya suda? So there's a big difference between a shir kviya suda of, let's say, someone in this room who's older than I am, let's say, and someone who's my age. How much pizza would someone eat for a shir kviya suda? I'm not going to ask you, Mrs. Metanki, to tell us how much pizza you would eat for a shir kviya suda. I would venture to guess that we probably have a difference in the shir kviya suda. You shouldn't eat as much pizza as I would eat for a kviya suda. So that halachic distinction would apply.
Discuss teenage boys.
Oh, yeah. So that is an important discussion in halacha in general of how to differentiate what is miyuchad, what is the proper avenue. Moving right along, if you look, skip the next lachem la'achla. At the bottom line right here, quoting from a Gemara in Pesachim that appears all over the place, la'achla v'lo lehefsed. We'll put that here as number three. La'achla v'lo lehefsed, not for destruction, for loss, for waste. You're not allowed to discard peiros shvius. So let's say I have a bottle of wine, and this is where it's going to start to come up lemaisa. I go to the store right here on Dempster, and I buy a bottle of wine. Well, this bottle of wine, I'm going to look on the back, it's going to have a hechsher on it, obviously. So many of the wines that we're going to buy, maybe it's not appropriate for me to say, but I say we should buy wine from Israel, support the Israeli farmers, the wineries in Israel. Buy Israeli wine, no question about it. So you buy the Israeli wine, this once happened to me, you look on the back of the bottle, they tell you, is it mavushal, is it not mavushal, what's the hashgacha, what year is it from? Then you look on the bottom of the back of the bottle, and it says this wine is kadosh with kedushas shvius. Wow. And you're thinking to yourself, what does that even mean? Well, it means that there were grapes that grew, not tended, not hechter mechira. Very often, let's say, certain brands, not going to mention which ones, because I don't know if they're going to be this year, Otzer Bezdin. There is a practice called Otzer Bezdin, which is beyond the purview of this morning's discussion, that somehow, which we'll talk about in a little bit, they create this wine that has Kedusha Shvius, and they're selling it legitimately. It's okay, it's fine. Now, how it got to Dempster is a question, but they're selling wine. You're in Israel, you're visiting in Israel, you see this wine that has Kedusha Shvius on it. So it's an interesting question. Even Motzoi Shabbos, some of us have a minhag, because the Chazal teach us that when a cup runs over with a little bit of wine, so it's a simen bracha. So some people don't have this minhag on Motzoi Shabbos. My Rebbe Rav Shefter pointed out once that his mother once lectured him that he was spilling the wine on Motzoi Shabbos. He said, "Ma, it's a simen bracha." She said, "It's a simen shlump, not a simen bracha." So some people don't have the practice to spill over a little bit of wine, but here's a good question. Last night when I made Havdalah, so I spilled over a little bit of wine, then what happens with the little droplets? I splashed it right into the sink. So that's a good question. And Shavias, are you allowed to spill over the wine and just pour it down the drain? Similarly, it comes up, what do I do with my leftovers? So, you know, when I was growing up, so either my brother or I, we would finish all the leftovers on the table. Whoever's leftovers they were, we would finish them. Now, I'm a little bit more discriminating, so I wouldn't necessarily eat all the leftovers on the table. So let's say one of the kids has leftovers that has Kedusha Shvius in it. It has the sanctity of Shemitah. We go to Israel, and you'll find this when you go. We should all be zocha to go to Israel at some point. Who knows, Bekarov? They'll have a calendar. When are certain vegetables and fruits kodesh b'kedusha shvius? Now, how they got that way is not the discussion. But you know, you have beets. You're eating beets that have the sanctity of shvius on them. If I take them and throw them into a gross garbage with spoiled milk in it, I have now wasted. I have been mafsid. I destroyed and I ruined my peiro shvius. My beets that have the sanctity of Shemitah on them. So therefore, if you go to Israel during the Shemitah year, you will find in many places they have different practices. Some people, what they have, is they have a plastic bag, and you take any plastic bag, although in California there are no more plastic bags, so if you have perishables in California, you have to export them. But in California, you take the little plastic bag, and again, I'm speaking in front of people who actually live this reality, I'm just speaking from the theoretical. You put the perishables, you put it in the plastic bag, you tie it up, and you put it in the garbage, and then it will decompose on its own. There is a question, what we call gram hefsed. You didn't actually cause it. You put it on the street in the middle of Dempster, and you just walked away, and then some semi came over and rolled over it. So that's not actively destroying the Shemitah fruit. That would be gram hefsed. So there's a question about whether you could do that. But if you put it in a plastic bag, that's no problem. Other people, what they'll do, like in yeshivas, when I was in the Grus school, I went to visit once, it was a Shemitah year, so they have what's called the Pach Shemitah. The Pach Shemitah is where everybody takes all the leftovers. I assume in the yeshiva they have the same thing. Everybody takes all the Shemitah leftovers, you drop it in the Pach Shemitah, and then it will rot over time. Not in your house, you put it in the backyard or wherever, and then you will not have destroyed it. It over time became rotten on its own, and then there's no violation of ruining it. But this is the second thing to be aware of, not to waste perishvias. Now one could, from a Drush standpoint, one could also think about the significance and the import of this in terms of food waste and what that means and the significance of the kedusha of the food and how we treat it. There's a lot, we could spend the whole morning just talking about that. Two more points before we conclude. The next one appears on the next page. Second line, La'achla, Tanya, this is Gemara Bechoros. I think, what number is it? I don't have the page.
Three.
Number three. Behema shvias ain't pod in boa petar chamor vadai. You cannot use the peru shvias to exchange for a petar chamor, not for our discussion, my taima. La'achla amarachmona velola schora. It's for the purpose of eating, not for doing business. And this, if you look in the seventh parak of Masechah Shviyas, there are detailed discussions about the fact that you cannot do business with Peru Shviyas. Now, that doesn't mean you can't sell Peru Shviyas. Let's say if someone is a farmer and they bring in, they do not harvest their fruit on Shviyas because you're not allowed to harvest. They bring it in the halakhically appropriate way. And turns out they have too much left. They figured they needed 10 apples for the week, and now they only need 7. And the extra 3 apples they're going to get rotten, they want to do something with them. So you can give it to your neighbor, or you could sell it, because it's not your business. You're not making a business out of Peru Shvias. But there is a restriction. If you were a farmer, you can't do business with Peru Shvias. So I mentioned before, this thing called Otsar Beis Din. Otsar Beis Din means the rabbinical court, the local Beis Din, takes over your business. You're not doing the Peru Shvias. You're not doing the business. You essentially... you contract out to the rabbis to be your agents, to be the farmers. Now, most rabbis that I know aren't very successful farmers. I can't speak for Rabbi Tarragon. Maybe he has something going on in his garden. But I wouldn't make a very good farmer. So you know what I need to do? I need to go out to the marketplace and hire a farmer. So what you'll see is an actual farmer who's doing the work, but he's doing the work on behalf of the rabbis. So that's how you will find that Israel today is becoming more and more popular. I believe that you will find, now this only works for trees, but that means it works for wine, it works for fruits. You'll find wine or fruits that have Kedusha Shvias, and yet they're selling them in the store. How could they be selling them in the store if they have Kedusha Shvias? You're not allowed to sell them. The answer is the rabbis are essentially running the whole geshef by stepping in for the farmers, hiring other farmers, and then sending that produce. So when you're thinking about setting up your life in Israel, when we all, Habalina Latov, we all go settle in Israel, if we want to become farmers, we should be mindful that we can't do slower and perish vias. So this brings us to this case of the other aspect, the Rambam says in Parakei and Hilchos Shvias, that you shouldn't take perish vias to Chutz Laretz. So it used to be, I don't know, I think it's probably still like this now, when you would come back from Israel to America, so they would have dogs sniffing your bags, checking for Romanian going one way, Kishka going the other way. They're very careful about things. And one of the things that you have to sign on those blue documents is, did you bring any livestock? Have you in contact with any livestock or fruit? So most people generally, when they're going to visit Israel, they're not coming in contact with too much livestock. Although when I was in Kiryat Yavne, we had a lot of contact with livestock. Not directly, but the livestock, a lot of livestock going around there. But fruit, you have it all the time. So the Rambam says explicitly that it's not appropriate to take, it's inappropriate to take peros shvias from Israel to Chutz Laretz. So for anybody who is in the business of smuggling Shemitah, generally, you know, you're trying to fool the guys, which is Dina de Malchus, it's probably not right to fool these guys anyway, but you shouldn't take peros Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah out to Chutz Laretz. So it's actually a big question, how could it be that the wine that I'm buying on Dempster has Kedusha Shvias? How did it get there? So there are some poskim who are lenient that when it comes to fruit and vegetables that were grown initially for export, that they will be lenient to allow that to be exported. But that's a good question. So So when I'm looking around in the store and I find Peirush Shvi'is, one of the things I'm going to think about, wow, it's interesting that he got here. How is it for Lola Schora? So on the label, it's going to say Otzer Bezdin. Otzer Bezdin means they were allowed to, it's not the farmer doing the business, it's the rabbi doing the business. And then I'm going to say, how did it get to Chutz Laretz? Well, it could be that they have some arrangement that this was initially produced for Yitzur, for production for Chutz Laretz. So the next piece is Velo Laskora, not to make a business out of it, and Velo, I might be losing my ground here, thank you, Velo Lachul. And the last item, and this is probably the most tricky one, which is beyond the time limit that we have for today, but I just want to put it out there, and this is a new categorization called Bior. So we're familiar with Bior from the context of Bior Chametz. Now Bior Chametz in the context of Erev Pesach means you actually take all of your Chametz and you destroy it. So that is the opinion of some Rishonim when it comes to Peirush Shvi'is, but the predominantly accepted view in Rishonim is that that's not what Bior means. It means the following. The next Pasuk that follows this context has to do with the fact that we mentioned earlier that animals are also permitted, you're allowed to feed your animals fruit that grew during Shemitah. That is Kadosh B'Kedusha Shvi'is. If it's animal food, you feed it to animals. Well, wait a second. How often are the animals eating? Well, it depends. If you have a pet, you feed the pet as is, you know, whatever your schedule is. You feed the pet before you feed yourself based on the Pasuk and Kriyashma. But let's say there are chayas, because it says Vila Behemtecha, and for your pets, Velachayas, and for the wild animals out there. Well, the wild animals eat as long as there's food in the field. So the Gemara has a drasha that, wait a second, as long as there are animals eating this in the field, then you can eat it in your house. But as soon as kola lachaya basode, as long as there's no more out in the field, then you can't keep it in your home anymore. So cucumbers, that's tricky to grow cucumbers on Shemitah because you have to figure out how you planted them. But cucumbers, for example, they have a certain harvest, time when they are picked, and after that, there's nothing left. There's nothing out there. Well, at that point now, you have created a line whereby now all the peiros require biur. Now, we said biur, and biur chametz means it has to be destroyed. Most assume, we paskin, that biur means bimafkir, means to make it ownerless. But this is probably the most tricky component of, maybe, for us in Chutz Laretz, of consuming Peirush Shvi'is. Because the obligation is that if a person has these fruits or this bottle of wine, you have to be mafkir. You have to take it to the street curb and ideally in front of three people say, anybody who wants this bottle of wine, come take it. So that's a requirement. And midrabbanan, the rabbi said that if you don't do that, you may not drink it. You may not eat it. So it becomes a little bit tricky, and this is what, when you visit Israel, they have also charts telling you when it is that such and such produce becomes no longer permitted to be used without biur, without being mafkirit. So the tricky thing will become, let's say, and sometimes this can take several years, and I had this, bididi hava uvda, I had this happen to me. I was sitting at a particular table in someone's home, and we were drinking this wine, and I looked at the wine and said it was kadosh b'kedusha shvi'is. It was way beyond the shas habiur. Some suggest that the shas habiur for wine, I saw some jinx that the Erev Pesach of the 8th year. This was well beyond that. So it's important to be sensitive. It's actually important to think about. If you're going to be buying a bottle of wine that's Kodesh B'Kedusha Shvi'is, so first I'm going to be thinking about, number one, when I have Peirush Shvi'is, not to be Mishana them, not to change it radically. So Chazanish says you can juice it, and many say you could still make it into your strawberry soup, but it's something that's going on in my mind. All of a sudden, my food is halachically alive. It's amazing. Then I'm thinking to myself, Lola Schora, I'm not in the business of that. I don't have to worry about that. Lola Chul, I have to make sure I'm not taking Peirush Shvi'is out to Chutz Laretz unless there's some specific dispensation. And then the last thing, the most tricky part, is the biur, making sure that I'm eating, I'm not hoarding Peirush Shvi'is and saving them. I have to be able to dispose of them halakhically. In this case, it means be mafkir them. After you put them on the curb, you can take it back in your house. That's not a problem. But you have to go through that act of biur. All of these things are just, you know, some of the practicalities, the beginning, just the tip of the iceberg of a whole world of halakha that can help sensitize us to living true Jewish lives. it's not a secret that here in Chicago, our Judaism, it's a little bit fake. I mean, it's kind of real, but it's kind of fake. A real Jewish life is following the halachic calendar of Shvius, where all of a sudden we're sensitive to Shabbos Haaretz, the same way we have Shabbos every week. Ideally, on a national level, Rav Kook writes, and Rav Schwartz alluded to this in the Hagdamah of Shabbos Haaretz, this is our national Shabbos. And so even if we're living in Chutz Laaretz, the idea to be connected to Shvius, to be connected to Am Yisrael, that is in Eretz Yisrael, that's living this life today, in the year 2014, it's unbelievable. This is actually going on. So in whatever way we can connect, whether it means supporting farmers who are observing Shvius, whether it means buying Perish Shvius and eating it the proper way when we, you know, hopefully have the opportunity to be in Israel, whether it's even just learning the halachos of Shvius and connecting ourselves spiritually and emotionally, it's really an way to uplift our life here. Hopefully we'll all have the opportunity to observe this. B'meheirah v'yameinu. Thank you. After we'll the flight.
We want to thank everyone for joining us, and we thank Rabbi Brand for a wonderful presentation.
They call them
So two things. First of all, this is about to become 100% relevant. In 10 days, I'm going home. And I phrase it that way because that's how it feels. Going home. So the question is, what about plants that are specifically and always grown for medicinal purposes, such as aloe or belladonna or acai berries?
That's their
original intent.
I have to check. That's a good question. It might be like sphere. I don't know. I have to think about it.
I mean, to me, it seems the obvious answer is that a year before Shemitah, you start planting them in planter boxes.
Right. Well, once you're doing it in a planter box, it's different. It depends
right.
If it's in the ground or...
No, you elevate it. You put it on a table. You put the aloe in the planter boxes.
Right.
But I mean, you might not.
That's a good question.
So you have aloe plants, they just grow naturally. They're big and they grow wild. And they don't really need a lot of cultivation. They're a type of cactus.